It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Blindly Obvious, it's clear as can.
The Blindly Obvious podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. All views expressed on this show do not constitute professional advice. We make no representation or warranties regarding the accuracy, completeness, or applicability of the content we express. These are merely our opinions, and as such, we encourage everyone to form your own opinions.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we are talking the conversation of the do's and the don'ts. There's always those little life stories or one-liners that kind of stick with you and maybe shape your picture of how reality works. Jeff, do you have any of those kind of stories? I mean, you got the birds and the bees, maybe? The do's and the don'ts? I don't know. What do you got?
First, you got to tell me, did your parents ever sit you down and tell you about the birds and the bees?
Actually, if I'm being honest, my sister told me about that when I was probably like, 11 years old. My mom was not happy about it.
Yeah, my parents never did, though. My parents never did.
I feel like that was a generational thing of, man, I don't think that really happened, which opened the door for this conversation to be running rampant in school now. But all that aside, man, that is an awkward conversation to have. So I do get why parents are like,
I had it with my kids.
Maybe you would just figure that out.
I had it with my kids. We where do babies come from? How does that work? We didn't go into the birds and the bees. We just talked about it openly.
Just said straight out.
Men got these parts and women have those parts. And many don't believe that today, but that's the truth.
I was gonna say, you can cut yours off and become this if you want.
No, you can cut it off and be without one, but you're still a dude. We told them the truth and laid it out there in a age-appropriate way. Because I learned about sex in elementary school early years. I think it was second grade that I learned about it. And it was like, this is probably not the way to do it. This is probably not the way for a kid to learn about it. And then my dad, who saw me kissing this girl in the front yard. And he goes, son, do you know what you're doing? And that's the only sex ed talk I have with my dad.
Do you know what you're doing?
I was like, I think so. He goes, okay. And that was the end of it. That was our only conversation that spanned the whole area of sex and all that stuff. So.
And just on the surface, what an awkward conversation. But also the other side of that is the whole, you can kind of just figure that out. That's not good either, because that leads down the road of the show 16 and Pregnant.
You know what? Exactly. You know what helped me was I was in youth ministry for years. And Pam Stencil, if you got kids, I recommend you go find her videos on YouTube, but she's the one that popularized the idea about a fireplace is beautiful in its proper place.
Hmm.
In your fireplace, like you have one in your house, it's beautiful there and it's appropriate. It warms the home and it's appreciated, especially when the power goes out. It's appreciated.
Yeah.
You know where it's not appreciated? In the kitchen, on your countertop, on the couch, in your bedroom.
Everywhere,
you don't want it there.
Everywhere it doesn't belong.
So it is with sex in its proper confines that God gave us in its proper boundaries. It's beautiful, but anywhere else, it's destructive and dangerous.
And being able to look at it, I guess, as an adult versus a young teenager who was hormonal per se, it makes so much more sense as for the boundaries we're given for the fact of when it is put in its wrong place, not that it's not going to momentarily feel good, obviously, but the potential consequences that come about are going to be much longer than the short moment of feel good that you had.
If sin wasn't fun, nobody would be tempted.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And that's the reason it's awkward is because I think that a lot, you know what, we've allowed our society to make sex disgusting and dark and evil, dag nasty evil, porn to this gender stuff going on in our country. And so we can't have an appropriate conversation about it.
At least
we think we can't.
Because it's so far out of the boundaries that it once existed in.
Because it's hard for you to discuss it now as God gave it without also addressing what man did to it.
Right.
But you have to.
I know.
And you got two little girls. You got to have that conversation with them separately.
You know, All right, here's a good one for life, little life mantras.
Mm-hmm.
When you just said that, that just reminded me of this. When we moved here, our neighbor, a woman, she has two daughters also, and she's an older lady. She goes, "Honey, I'm going to give you some advice somebody gave me a long time ago with having girls." I said, "All right, what's that?" And she said, "Well, if you have a boy, you only got to worry about one thing in town. If you got girls, you got to worry about everything in town."
That's a true story.
And I said, "Oh man, that's actually really sadly true."
All right. So framing for things that you've heard over the years that you find yourself coming back to over and over and over again, as you look at the world and go, "Yep, that's how it is." Like, it's framed things for you so accurately that it doesn't matter whether you're talking the music industry,
just any area of
anything.
Life.
Yeah, politics. Kind of a
general rule of thumb.
How nations do applies. And don't work. How each country's governed to the church. I mean, anything. I mean, it just really captures the essence of how things work or why they don't.
A specific phrase.
Yeah, there's something. I can give you an example.
All right. I was thinking of, like, don't count your chickens before your eggs before they hatch.
Yeah, that's one, yeah. I mean, it could be, but it's like that.
Let me hear your example.
All right, so I hadn't been married maybe 5 years, and my father-in-law sat me down once, and he said, "There's three kinds of people in the world."
Well, this isn't even fair. You're getting southernly gentleman advice.
And it's good stuff, dude.
Yeah, well,
good
it always stuff. Is. That's what I'm saying.
And he was trying, as a young man, to help me understand how the world works or why it doesn't.
All right.
All right. And it's one of those, like, "Whoa, okay, this, I better listen," kind of thing, right? It's like, this is going to be, like, deep, man.
And even if I don't want to, this is my father-in-law, I have to anyways.
He always had these good, I don't know why.
Like one-liners?
Yeah, man, they were so good. This is more than a one-liner, though. It's so simple and deep. And you're going to love picking this apart.
All right. Let's hear it.
So there's three kinds of people. There's those who watch things happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's those who make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the third group of people are the ones who are always saying, what happened? The ones who watch things happen, it's a pretty large number of the population.
Mm-hmm.
The group that makes things happen, it's very small, maybe 10, maybe 15% of the population.
I would say that's probably a stretch at 15%, yeah, but agree. I'm trying to be
very generous. And then this one seems to be competing with the first one, who are oblivious, walking around going, what just happened?
I think some of the reason for that is that the observers oftentimes blend into the other group of, could we call them the reactors? You're observing, but maybe not always intently or closely. And then you bleed into that other category of maybe reacting to things that happen versus preparing for things to happen.
Well, the clueless people in our population, which is a growing number, right? It's always growing. They're enablers of the second group who just watch, because they always can say, "Well, at least I'm not that idiot." Right. And they are often, by the way, these people are easy to spot because their mouth's always moving, but their hands and feet aren't.
Mm.
They're the critics. They're always the armchair quarterback or the keyboard warrior, you know, or armchair warrior, however you want to, whatever picture you want to paint.
Captain Hindsight, whenever something happens, man, here's how we could have done it after it happened.
But the moment you put them on the spot and say, "Hey, I'm so glad you're volunteering for this to help us out next time." "Oh, no. You just need these little pointers I'm going to give you, and you can fix everything and get it right."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They will not raise, some of them raise a finger even to save themselves.
Mm.
I mean, we're talking like Titanic people who are sitting there on the deck chairs, man, as the boat's sinking. Listen to the band play.
Still sounds good.
You guys are doing a great job. Just one more. But no, you're movers and shakers, the ones who make things happen. And they're anywhere from behind the scenes to on the front of the stage. But they're too busy to have a conversation with either of the other two groups. They're just moving, making things happen. And they're the ones who make this world work.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse, and depending on their intentions.
Sure, sure. And that's a whole other angle there is that mm-hmm. just because you're making things happen doesn't mean it's for the benefit of all.
Sure.
Now, some of those people, they're moving, and it's either for selfish reasons or even, this is weird, to destruction. They're actually trying to sabotage things.
Sure. I think that's a pretty good advice there. And I would agree that, I guess if I'm being honest, I probably bleed through all three categories at different points. Sometimes I can be more of, like I said, the Captain Hindsight person of, well, man, we could have done it more like this, and that would have been way better. Versus sometimes I take the initiative to, hey, here's a way this could go, and like you can just make it happen. Do it. Get it done. And then I do think, though, I feel like I spend probably most of my time in the second group of observation. And I don't think that's always a bad thing. It can be, because complacency kills destiny, right? But if you're just constantly complacent and observing, you're never leaning into the smaller group of making things happen, and you're much more likely to be pulled into the group of reacting to what does happen.
If you don't know what you're doing and you just jump in there and get your hands dirty and you're gonna, whatever it is, you're gonna do something, you may make a lot of noise. You may break a lot of things.
Right. And also, you may be used by somebody who does know what they're doing as a useful idiot.
Right. So you're trying to be helpful or constructive or destructive, but there's something to be said for a person who watches to learn, always with the intent to one day be an action person.
Sure. It's much easier just to observe and, you know, use and give yourself that excuse of, well, yeah, one day I'm gonna make things happen. When in reality, like, you're just going to keep sitting in the same seat.
If you're saying that all year long, you're an observer.
Right.
Yeah. If you're a one dayer, you're a one day.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'll tell you one of the things that I, for the critic, I can be a critic. And what I try and do so that I'm not the armchair quarterback guy mm-hmm. is I try and wait until a person who is a doer, a worker, and they say, hey, you saw this happen. What's your honest input and how can we make this better?
Hmm.
That's when I will give that constructive criticism. Otherwise, unless it's family, I tend to keep my mouth shut or a very close friend.
Well, and just like you just said, though, we're talking being a critic versus constructive criticism.
Right.
Those are different things. Somebody who's looking to just point out any slight flaw or failure in a situation in order to kind of demean or downplay its relevance is much different than someone who's like, hey man, there were some good things that were done here, but here's some areas that could be improved upon. And here's, you know, maybe a suggestion or some advice on how I think it could be improved.
When you offer that constructive criticism, even when it's invited, is to be able to discern when you're trespassing.
That's tough.
It is, because and I'll tell you when you know when you're trespassing or you're about to, is when they become defensive. When they become defensive over whatever it is you're bringing up, doesn't mean that it's not still welcome, but it's like, okay, I wasn't ready for that. So you're speaking ahead of something before I formed an opinion on that is still my baby and I'm protective of.
Sure.
And so your criticism is, I'm not sure I want your criticism yet on that,
yeah,
that particular issue. That's hard.
Well, so some people are also just defensive,
sure,
in general. But, I mean, there absolutely is something to presentation and delivery, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can have the truth and deliver it in an ineffective way. Therefore, it's really not heard.
Oh, I got one more for you then. You just said it, so I'll say it. What's the difference in Restaurant A and Restaurant C? Both serve dead cow, dead chicken, dead fish.
None of them are presented as dead cow, dead chicken, and dead fish.
Dead pig, yeah. No, well, first of all, yeah, they don't say, hey, you want a side of dead cow?
Yeah.
But the reason why you prefer Restaurant A over Restaurant C and E is because you like their presentation better.
Mm-hmm.
They make a better burger. They make a better steak. They got a better fish sandwich.
Their service is higher quality.
Yeah. Presentation. Yeah. Matters.
Absolutely.
I was like, wow, that's really cool. And it was a big epiphany for me. It's like, yeah, all the restaurants serve basically the same four things. Dead cow, dead chicken, dead pig, dead fish.
Yep.
And some make it and some don't. Why? Right. Presentation.
All how you present said things. I don't feel like I have any like one-liners like that have really stuck with me that I've hung on to for forever. I guess maybe one for me would be a don't think it can't happen to you. I think it's probably a mantra that's kind of stuck with me of, I think it's easy to be in a position where you're like, oh, that would never be me. I'd never do that, to the good or the bad.
Right, right. Like win the lottery or be a sucker.
Right.
Either one.
And then all of a sudden you may find yourself in said position and going, oh man, I just really got humbled in some capacity. So I guess I would say maybe that one for me, but I don't know. I don't really have those one-liners like that have really stuck with me. I like them. I enjoy them, but I don't know that I have had one that I would say like, oh man, I've kind of lived my life by that.
Mm. I love the story ones. The whole fable built around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bird that didn't fly south for the winter one.
You know? I don't think I know that story.
It's one of my favorites.
Now you got to tell it to us.
I got to clean it up though, because it's from the south. And when I first heard this, it was a very, it could be vulgar. Let's just put it that way. There's this bird that was, you know, just a little lazy and was a little slack in going south for the winter. It's way up north where it's cold, and everybody else is flying south for the winter, and he stays behind and says, I'll go later, whatever. And winter comes, surprise snow comes, big field, and trying to get some food. And as he's flying, his wings freeze up and he falls into the field. And he's like, oh no, I'm going to die. I'm out here in the middle of this cow pasture and all these cows are going to step on me. I'm a goner. I should have left with everybody. And oh, what a mistake. He's just lamenting all his bad decisions. And right about then, he's about to freeze to death in the cold, in the snow. Cow comes over and takes a big dump on him. Didn't step on him. He just knew he's going to die, but it takes a big dump on him. And it covered his entire body except for his head. And he could still breathe. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. Here I am about to die. And now, instead of being stepped on, I get pooped on. He's all flipping out. And then all of a sudden he realizes, hey, wait a second. I'm feeling pretty good here. In fact, I'm quite warm. And he realizes I can feel my wings and I can feel my feet. And he's almost just about ready to dance in this poo. He's so happy, he begins to sing. And as he's singing in the pile of his poo, a barn cat hears him singing, walks over, scoops him out of the poo, and eats him.
Oh, man.
And here's the moral of the story. Not everybody who takes a poo on you is your enemy. And not everybody who gets you out of the poo is your friend.
Hmm.
And when you're neck D up in poo, keep your mouth shut. I love it.
But it's
one of those things that you hear and it's like, dude, there's a lot of life lessons in that.
Uh-huh. That's how you know it came from the South.
That Southern wisdom.
It's good stuff, man.
It is, man. And there's stories you can take with you. Because think about it. When you're neck D in poo, what comes out of your mouth? Usually it's nothing constructive or helpful.
Nothing good.
Yeah. So right. Just keep your mouth shut. Uh-huh. It's going to get you in trouble.
Well, not to mention, you're more likely to consume some more poo if you're neck deep in it.
Yeah. And the other one is that the people who are pulling everybody else out of a bad situation, you think those are your friends. I'll give you a good example. You know, I saw a TikTok on this the other day. It's also on YouTube, where in our national forest, you can get fined if you feed the bears or the whatever, the birds, whatever.
Right, because they then gain a dependency on people feeding them.
Right.
So they stop eating in the wild
right.
So much.
They're unable to fend for themselves, and then you end up ultimately making them a dependent that if you don't continue to come every day and feed them, they're going to die.
Right. Because I said, hey, where y'all at?
Right. So you're hungry. You trying to bail them out in that moment isn't helping them. You're hurting them. It's like welfare. We did the same thing.
Same concept.
Same concept. It only applies to animals, right? It doesn't work with humans. Oh, wait. Yeah, it does. And the other one. So, and the people that mess on you, the person criticizing you, the person who, the Bible says it this way, you can trust the wounds of a friend. It's the enemy who multiplies kisses. You should be weary and leery of the person who always gives you compliments. I bet you that person often is the one
out to get you,
is stabbing you in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who has the courage and the love and the concern for you to tell you what you don't want to hear, that's your real friend.
Well, because how much of your, not always, but how much of your poopy situation per se that we find ourselves in sometimes is due to the, you know, one, our own doing first and foremost, but the validation of so-called friends or loving family members around us who have encouraged us to validate what we wanted to do in the first place by just telling us what we wanted to hear instead of what we needed to hear.
And so we did something we should have never done.
Right. Even though those around us probably saw that, hey, man, you shouldn't be doing that.
It's a bad idea. Don't do it. But they didn't say it.
Now, ultimately, you have the free will choice to do what you will do. But how often maybe would we say, like, oh, you know what? Thank you. I needed to hear somebody say that out loud to me to know, like, yeah, I don't need to do that.
And this is one of those that's hard to acknowledge, but that's what our polite society gives us, is that you're not allowed to ever say something that people might be offended by because, you know, our precious feelings are more precious than the truth.
Well, man, there's a drastic difference between being nice and being kind, isn't there?
Absolutely. Explain it.
Being nice is constantly telling somebody what they want to hear, refusing to ever ruffle the feathers, so going along to get along at all times. Being kind is treating people the way you would want to be treated, respectfully. But at the same time, if you see that a loved one or a family member or just, you know, someone close to you, maybe a fellow believer at your church, is out of line and out of order, you would politely correct them and encourage them to go the other way. And now that's kind of difficult. It may ruffle the feathers, may make a little bit of uncomfortability, but doesn't change the fact that you were kind about it, right? Kind of plays back into the being kind goes with the good presentation. If you can present the truth in a way that is heard, it's effective.
Jesus was kind, but he was not nice.
Exactly.
And nice is one of those things where I will be polite and not tell you the truth because I don't want you to perceive that I'm not nice. Kind is to tell you, hey, you're doing something wrong, all the while being gracious and allowing you to retreat to a place of safety and not rub it in your face.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, sometimes you got to flip them tables over.
Yes. A nice person wouldn't do that.
That's right. A kind person would.
You know why? Because they were robbing people.
He said, this is enough.
They were taking advantage of people who were trying to worship God.
While claiming to be the friend that was pulling you out of the poopy situation.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
All the while criticizing the doers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It all comes together. Which one are you? That's what we need to ask people. So are you a person who watches things happen? Are you a person who's making things happen? Or are you a person who's running around saying, what happened?
To reacting to what happens.
Yes.
This has been Blindly Obvious. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
We're walking past the signs each day in little things missed along the way. The symbols hidden in glamour's light of sight. Misdirection, the magician's lie. A trick so good you don't ask why. The truth, it sits with open arms, but we fool ourselves with deception's charm.
See it, the roads lead back to you.